Okay, yeah. Now that's a good idea. Someone should know the names of the characters since we're doing a podcast on it. Hello and welcome to the Park Stop Plus podcast, episode 3. We're back. Today we're going to have a review of The Mandalorian season 1. My name is Alicia Stella. With me as always my co-host Ian.
Hey kids.
And welcome back Adam of the Disney Magic Hour podcast, also Movie Guy 365 on YouTube.
Hello everybody.
And joining us for the first time on Park Stop Plus, Peter Tadone, who is also of the Disney Magic Hour podcast, and you may have remembered from our normal Park Stop podcast.
Hello again.
Thanks, Pete, for coming back.
Oh, thank you for having me back.
You're kind of famous now because you've been quoted in Fortune magazine.
Quote ever.
Yeah, that was pretty accurate. I was like, yeah, if anything's going to get pulled for a quote, this is the one that should get pulled.
I contemplated cutting it out. I'm like, drug use should not be in our podcast, but I left it in. Rise of the Resistance. What was it? Rise of the Resistance is like the great movie ride on cocaine times a million.
Yeah, I stand by that too. I stand by that. That's an accurate, it's an accurate description.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah. Accurate enough to be quoted in Fortune magazine.
Yeah.
Today's episode is brought to you in part by etscent.com/parkstop. Start your new year off right with candles that smell like the ETQ.
They actually smell really good. I still like mine.
And other theme park stuff. Yeah, they have butterbeer, I think, now too.
I didn't try that one yet.
Butterbeer has a smell?
Well,
it's just toffee?
Oh, that'd be awesome.
That's etscent.com/parkstop and use promo code parkstop to save 15% off your order. Today we're going to talk about the entire Mandalorian season 1, which, you know, spoiler warning for every single episode of The Mandalorian so far.
Just all of them? Yeah.
Yeah. So we all hated it, right? It's just a terrible show from the beginning. I don't know why we watched it. Worst thing ever.
More like Mandalorian. Someone wrote that somewhere. You know what they did. They meant it because they're miserable.
Needs more force ghosts.
Needs more force ghosts. Put it on my tombstone. My God.
I do want to say we're going to attempt to not say spoilers for The Rise of Skywalker, but they're going to seep in probably. It's going to be hard to not compare our feelings for one thing against another thing. So.
I can talk about a way of delivering story that really works for me in Mandalorian that doesn't work for me in the movie without getting into details. Right. So when we get to that point, I can do it without spoiling, you know, the movie that's been out for a couple weeks. I feel like everyone who really cares has seen it. But, you know, people have kids for some reason and work. So I don't, you know, there's probably somebody out there who does want to see it who's not gotten the chance to yet.
Although I do want to say, disclaimer, I did like the movie. I don't want you, just because one thing is better does not mean I did not enjoy that film. Because I know this is the internet and someone will attack me for saying I didn't enjoy it. So yes, I enjoyed it. It was fine. It's fine. It's not like a masterpiece. It was fine. Okay.
It's bad.
So The Mandalorian. We technically talked about chapter 1 through chapter 4 in previous episodes of Park Stop Plus. So go back and listen to those if you haven't yet. But just overall, what do you guys think of this show now that we've seen the full first season? I'll start, Pete, we'll start with you. What do you think of the show, like, in its entirety so far as Star Wars media?
I think it's been really good. And one of the big... I think there is an adjustment, though, for an audience, because we have been so trained the last number of years to what we now call prestige TV, where, you know, the budget is one thing, but it's more like the storyline is this massive overarching storyline. And no matter what the contents of the first 59 minutes of an hour long show is, that last minute like has to have this big hang, this big spoil, you know, not spoiler, but like this big tease for the next week and the overarching story. And Mandalorian is not really they're not worried about that in a number of their episodes. I would say 4 through 6, even maybe 3 through 6, you know, they're content with telling a weekly tale that's a singular adventure that, of course, when you get to the last chapter or second to last chapter, pieces of them all matter. And I think that's very valuable as a watcher. But it's totally content in just having an episode that just tells a specific story and doesn't worry about, you know, doing the bigger thing and the bigger thing. So I think a lot of people may have had a hiccup with that a little bit in season one, but I think Filoni and Favreau did a really good, and all the directors, Deborah Chow, Taika Waititi, Rick Famuyiwa, Bryce Dallas Howard, thank God we're not talking about chapter four. You know, they all did a really good job of showing you, you know, like, hey, this is the story that we're going to be giving you, and it's in pieces, and just enjoy it. It can be 35 minutes long, but it's okay. So I really enjoyed it. And the bigger part of it for me is there's a lot of references and whatnot. And this is kind of like what I was referring to earlier. This film obviously has ties to the larger Star Wars universe that we know of. Like, we go to familiar locales, we see familiar archetypes, but they're subverted. It's not the way that we remember them. You know, we go to...
We'll definitely get into that with Tatooine especially.
Exactly. That's the biggest one. You know, everything gets subverted in that way. So
It's not just like, hey, remember this?
Yeah. It's like, hey, remember this? Well, it's totally changed now. You know, yeah, it's totally changed now. Like, we can go to Mos Eisley and there's only droids, where we remember it as... no droids.
We remember it as Halloween masks.
Yeah, and as a astronaut for some apparent reason. You know, but that was the stuff that I really enjoyed, because it grew the world around it without distracting me of, you know, just pointing at it and say, ah. The only part I will say that did do that was in chapter five, where we have our like fake Han Solo. Mm-hmm. And he's even got his leg up on the table. It's a little too much.
I call him non-Han.
Yeah. Bobby Cannavale's son is, I guess, the only way I can think of him now. But I really enjoyed this season a lot. I think it had some bigger – the highs were always bigger than the lows. Like, there was a low point for me in the season, but it was the very middle, and it didn't distract me from the other excellent seven chapters.
Adam, what do you think? And why is this your favorite Disney Star Wars movie?
Well, it's funny. When I started watching The Mandalorian, I immediately started thinking about back when Lucas had control of Star Wars. And he kept talking about a live action series that he was planning. And, you know, every once in a while, we get little nuggets and hints about what he was thinking about. But I think that, you know, even though this is purely a Disney product, I'm just amazed at what we got here, that this is an actual thing, and it's a good thing. High quality, good directors, good story, excellent characters. And I'm very pleased with where The Mandalorian started, ended up. Yeah, Pete said, there is a lull a little bit here and there, but even the lulls are better than some of the stuff we get on regular TV today. And I'm very appreciative of the extraordinary talent that's behind the camera, in front of the camera for this series. And I can't wait to see where season two goes.
Ian, can you talk a little bit about how Jon Favreau single-handedly kicked off the Marvel Cinematic Universe, made $4 billion in live-action remakes that are computer-generated for Disney, and somehow managed to pull this off as well?
Well, on his chef show on Netflix, he was cooking with Dave Filoni, so that's probably where it all started. No.
Let's go back to Swingers.
Oh man.
No, but you like the show too, right?
I love the show. I loved everything about it. I liked that the episodes were not long. They didn't feel long. Even
that's a good point.
Even the longer episodes, there was enough to keep you interested that it didn't feel draggy, like overly draggy, like a lot of shows can get. Like, the lulls were fine. They kind of like worked for the tempo for me, considering I just watched all of them back to back today in one run. So really? And I really like the Western feel. They did a really good job. The sound design, the music, everything was so good, and it definitely made me feel like either Western or the Japanese samurai movies the Westerns ripped off, basically, is what I went between. And I really enjoyed that, and it was fun to see the characters. They weren't afraid to have fun. They weren't afraid to make it serious. It's just an overall good show. You got like a little bit of everything out of it. And there wasn't anybody with a lightsaber running around, really, for the most part.
We'll get to that. Is this like, okay, I haven't watched any of the animated shows. Is this like a live action version of the animated shows, or is it like that but more subdued?
So yes, it is, in the way that, again, there can be episodes that are just side adventures, but then once you're done with the season, you can kind of sit back and say, oh, that's why that happened. That's why that happened. Filoni has a real knack for that. So in that sense, yes. In the other sense, the show has to be smaller than Rebels or something like that, just because if you were to shoot a live action Rebels, that budget is tremendous. And even just to do this show, the budget is tremendous, but it would probably double if you went into the scale and scope of a Rebels. You get the feel of the animated shows here. Which, I mean, also Rebels was a Disney produced show. You know, that wasn't in the Lucas era. So this isn't their first go around with making the short form work with Disney. They just seem to be getting, you know, Rebels, I think, is the best Star Wars, quite frankly, ever.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask that because I haven't seen any of the animated stuff, and I was actually going to jump into one of them. And I was going to ask, like, which one is the best? Because I don't want to start with the worst.
Well, I mean, there's really only three.
Yeah.
I think you should start with Clone Wars because even though, but there's, I would look for a list online that maybe is an edited version of Clone Wars episodes that is just central to the plot because they go on a lot of multi-episode avenues that maybe don't contribute as much as you would want it to. You know, they're great character builders and pieces like that, but there's only so many times you can have Padme under the threat of political assassination. Like, and that happens a lot.
So pretty much any time she gets kidnapped, just skip that episode.
If she opens the show, just know someone's going to try to kill her. Like, that's what the show is. Like, that's the episode is someone's going to try to poison Batman.
Oh, man.
So that happens a lot. But you should watch that because I also think it's so key in getting the Ahsoka-Anakin relationship, which adds a ton of weight. To what then happens in Rebels.
I really like The Mandalorian and where it takes place. And I feel like that was big right out the gate for me because I actually understand where it's taking place. I'm not super familiar with the prequels, maybe watch them once and then watch the Plinkett reviews and that's about it. So I'm not like super in tune with all the characters and their motivations. And, but at the same time, I do know, okay, I know that the Empire fell and I can understand, oh, this is the world after that. And that's super interesting to me. So I like where The Mandalorian takes place. I think it was a good choice.
I think you'll get something out of Clone Wars, though, because the prequels, I enjoy them, but they're not good. Like, there's just no argument against it. They're just not very good. But you can watch Clone Wars as kind of a replacement in many aspects. And I think you'll see that they're better put together. Rebels is spectacular. It's just spectacular.
Well, okay, with The Mandalorian... Let's just get into the episodes because you brought up the Tatooine thing, the Gunslinger, chapter 5. I just right out the gate, like, forget talking about the episode. Who is the mysterious person that walks into frame at the end for no reason?
It is teasing the idea of Boba Fett because he has, yeah, because if you listen, and again, this is kind of like real nerdy stuff, but. If you watch Empire Strikes Back, when Boba Fett walks into the hall where Vader basically is like, you know, sit down and have dinner with me for whatever reason. Hi, daughter. I don't know it's you, but this is really awkward. That part on Cloud City, Boba Fett walks in. He has spurs on. It's one of his little characteristics. He actually has spurs. So that's what that is an idea of hinting towards is that Boba Fett is alive. Now, That was something that they did originally in the expanded universe in Star Wars. That has since been retconned because that expanded universe doesn't exist anymore as canon. But Dave Filoni is involved in this show, and Dave Filoni is the guy who orchestrated Darth Maul coming back.
But
and that man was cut in half.
But I believe, well, cut in half is still easier to fix than being swallowed by a computer-generated added Venus flytrap.
So. Not when you got a jetpack. I mean, you know, he's got a jetpack and he can just crawl. Yeah. So I really don't think it's that much of a jump.
That's true. What is the digestive timeline for
thousands of years?
I was going to say, yeah, they brought back Palpatine. I'm just saying.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, spoiler alert, okay?
Damn, Ian broke that rule.
Sorry.
None of us can actually tell you how that occurred, so that's still a mystery.
Yeah, but it's okay, Tatooine.
I think the idea is that that is Boba Fett, because Ming-Na Wen's character, who I got to say, I kind of forget, Calican, maybe? She actually says, I'm supposed to meet somebody near the Dune Sea. So, you know, she does. Like, that person eventually tracks down where they were supposed to meet, and then probably follows her tracks to where they find the body. So that's the person she was supposed to meet. So we'll see. But that's a very nice little crumb that's been left. You got to, I don't know. Like, so Alicia, I'll ask you, have you found it a little distracting with the popularity and everything of Baby Yoda when the show is called The Mandalorian? Do you care about The Mandalorian?
Officially, I believe its name is The Child.
Yeah, The Child, yeah. But, like, do you care about The Mandalorian?
I tell you, though, I made a tweet the other day that it's going to be a long year until the fall, because the GIFs, the memes, we're to the point where it's almost the boomers and minion memes. Like, we're almost to the point where the Baby Yoda has been co-opted by everyone, and it is so uncool now that by the time the show comes back, we're all going to be sick of him. Just sick of him. So that's my concern. I don't mind where the show ended up, and I kind of predicted it at the very beginning. In the first episode, when we did our first episode, I predicted that all these characters were going to come back at the end and team up, despite him not wanting to work with a droid. This droid was somehow going to be his partner. And I like the idea that, like, these two lone wolves have found each other. These foundlings have found each other, and now they're going across the galaxy and righting wrongs together. That's fine. I'm fine with that. But the internet needs to back off just a hair. And now with the merchandise coming out, ooh.
You know what? My best suggestion is get off the internet. Like, that's really... The best suggestion ever.
Disney Plus isn't even available in all markets yet. Europe doesn't even have it, or the UK doesn't even have it yet. And it's already like, the internet's already run this meme into the ground, and they haven't even saw the reveal yet. How sad is that?
VPNs, kid, VPNs.
anything that is against the law.
Me personally, all that stuff is funny, but, like, I don't know, I largely ignore it. I'm super curious of what they wind up doing with this character eventually, because my whole thing has always been what we eventually, you know, was said out loud in Chapter 8. This guy, this Mandalorian, cannot protect this child from the threats that will eventually come after them.
That's why they're a good team. He's strong too. The child is strong too. They work.
But eventually, there's going to be someone who probably understands the dark side of the Force. And this Mandalorian almost got killed by a rhino, by space rhinos. Like, he doesn't have a chance versus the other one. And this is still a child.
He didn't have his jetpack at the time. Okay, wait.
He didn't have a jetpack.
Do any of you play video games? Because to me, this show is like watching someone play a video game.
It is. And it's armor upgrade.
That's something Ian said in the first episode. You said that, like, I bet you by the end of this, he's going to have the full, what's the metal called? Beskar, please say it for me.
Adamantium.
Beskar.
It's Beskar. I was off by one letter. Come on.
You're right there.
You're good.
Beskar suit, and it's like he got it the second episode. He didn't have to wear third episode. Yeah, he didn't have to wait.
Then the predictable sigil at the end.
Right, but also in episode 3, he's like, I got to get me one of those. And at the end, he totally did get a jetpack. But also, just skipping to the end. He's going to get that laser sword. There's no doubt. He's getting himself a laser sword.
I don't know if that's going to happen.
I don't know.
They introduced the jetpack, and he's like, I want that. And they showed the audience the Darksaber, and the audience is like, oh, yeah.
But he didn't say I want that, so.
The audience did.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he wields the Darksaber at some point, but I don't think the show ends with him holding that Darksaber.
That's my thought is season 2, final episode of season 2, he defeats, what's that guy's name? I really don't know the name.
Moff Gideon.
Yeah, he defeats him and takes the Darksaber, and then we open the third season and he's like got his own laser sword. It says it on Wikipedia, according to Mandalorian custom, one could only obtain the Darksaber by defeating the previous owner in combat. Should they have claimed it any other way, their claim was considered illegitimate. All he has to do is beat him in combat. He gets himself a laser sword? Yeah, I think that's
well, it's heading. Actually, it's not, it's also not totally accurate. You can be given to somebody who says, like, no, you are the rightful leader of Mandalore, which that is the scenario in which I'm referring to, where he may not end the show, as in, like, when the show is done.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I think he's going to get it by combat and then give it to its rightful owner is the next season.
Baby Yoda.
He has to go on another another voyage. Baby Yoda.
Which
who has a growth
spurt. That then ties into bringing over some of the animated elements into live action, which it seems small, you know, from tiny to growing, they seem to be bleeding that in.
Oh, what you mean like Hondo, Inaka, and a Lothcat? Hondo in a theme park land as a live actor. Lothcat's in a theme park land. Lothcat ends up in the show. Just saying. Sometimes animated characters all from are Rebels. Making the jump.
And Sabine? But that's all from Rebels.
Isn't the Darksaber only exist in animation so far up until this point?
Yes. Yeah, Clone Wars and then Rebels.
Yeah.
You see Chopper and the Ghost in Rogue One. You hear General Syndulla's name in Rogue One. They don't show her, but they absolutely tell her that she's there.
The voice actor who plays Darth Maul in Solo is from the cartoon, isn't he?
Sam Witwer, yeah. Sam Witwer does the voice for Darth Maul when they did that reveal in the Solo film.
And it's not even the physical actor. He's just doing the voice to make sure it's right.
Yeah.
But we'll have Jim Cummings as Hondo one day in a live action doing the voice, I'm sure, just like the ride.
Absolutely, I assume. Yeah, I 100% assume that. I mean, they gave that character such a big part in Galaxy's Edge that you've got to imagine there's future plans for him. Again, I don't want to go into like details on the shows that I think that everyone should really watch, but you should really watch Clone Wars and Rebels, because a lot of these questions have direct influence from what happens in that show. And it's just great. It's a lot of fun.
What's neat is as a casual viewer who's never seen any of the animated programs, I'm watching The Mandalorian and I go, whoa, cool laser sword. It's thin and shiny. And it doesn't matter that I don't know the lore of it, but it got me to Google it and look it up. So it's kind of like interesting that it works for casual viewers or people who are super into it. And I like that it's kind of made for everyone. You don't have to do your research to enjoy the show.
Well, Adam, what do you think about that reveal?
Actually, I was just about to say the first thing I did after episode 8 ended was type in, was that the Darksaber? And of course it like pops right up. But no, I loved it. I love all that to steal a term Pete's wife likes to use. I like the lore. You know, it's just really interesting to see that bleed over between live action and animated. And I want to see more of that. I really want that whole thing to blur completely.
Speaking of Bill Burr.
That was a good episode.
Can we talk about the you liked The Prisoner Chapter 6? I feel like it was the weakest of them all.
Probably. I still thought it was fun, though. And I liked the mixing of actors.
Like getting a gang together and it's like the worst gang to get together.
Of course. What I mean, it was Clancy Brown was in there. The woman that played Tonks from Harry Potter was in there. And Bill Burr was in there. There's a lot of cool people. And like, it was fun. I thought it was fun. Little sidetrack from everything. Yeah.
And Clancy Brown actually played a voiceover for Darth Maul's brother in the animated series. So he's kind of like an alum from, you know, Star Wars already.
He's in Rebels too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like.
He does a different character's voice in Rebels as well. So yeah, Clancy Brown is everywhere in Star Wars right now.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was a nice break from like the heavy kind of story, just driving forward, because it started picking up a little bit at that point. So it was a nice little break for me.
Do you think it's character development or Disney being afraid to show the Mandalorian murdering people anymore? That the fact that he just locked them up at the last shot of the episode is like they're just locked up there.
Safekeeping for future villains that get out.
Oh, okay. I'll see that. Maybe. In the first episode, he is vaporizing literally everyone who gets in front of him. And this one, he had like the conscience to just lock them up and not kill them all. Cause they kind of left it like he killed them all, but then it cuts back and they're totally fine.
What do you guys think, Adam? What do you think they left him alive for?
I think it's more character development than Disney, you know, playing it safe. And if at the end they literally blow up that station with the X-Wing pilot, so I don't think they're too concerned about the death count.
Well, no, for Mando, though. But you know what? He's a father now, so he's looking at the world a little differently. Also, did you notice the X-Wing culture. Pilots are all the directors?
Yes.
I love that.
See, but Alicia, actually, I think you answered it without maybe realizing that you did. The thing that we see is he's usually vaporizing people while defending somebody else. Mm-hmm. And when it's himself, as long as it's not a droid, he tends not to kill the humans, because the droid thing, you know, we get the whole, not that it was a reveal, because they show it so many times. They showed it so many times, you know, like in previous episodes, little snippets of it here and there. But, you know, his hometown was attacked and destroyed by a droid army. Mm-hmm. So I think that they've been somewhat, I have to rewatch it, because I thought the same thing. I was like, wait, this guy's been pretty cold-blooded with, you know, dispatching people who have gotten in his way. But I want to go back and check over the first 5 episodes. Is he okay with vaporizing somebody when they are threatening to people around him?
Well, in the, or just the to first him? Scene of the first episode, he's killing people that are getting in the way of his score, not necessarily of hurting someone.
But that he can have an arc, though, because like I don't want him to act the first way in the first episode as he does later in the season.
That's why I think it's an arc more than it is defending. Yeah, he still kills, but now he does it for valid reasons.
Yeah, there are reasons for it going forward. And just major love to Rick Famuyiwa, who at one point, Bill Burr must have said, do you want me to just use my accent? And he's like, yes, I want you to be the most Bostonian man in space ever.
So I remember Bill Burr in an interview, a late night interview, and he was talking about how he hated Star Wars. He's like, I never got into it. It's not my thing. I understand you guys like it, but it's kind of dumb to me. Boom, he's in a Star Wars thing.
Get a good role. We got to run with it. That episode also, for me, was a massive uptick from the directorial standpoint that we had a couple episodes before that. I won't get into that, but I think it has one of the coolest sequences.
The AT-ST was cool. Thank you very much. I thought that episode
was cool. It was great. It was a wide shot. It was very cool. But like the Batman-esque red light going on. Red light going off as he's like approaching Bill Burr to knock him out. I was like, that's a great sequence. They're definitely going to come back into the mix later.
That's a good point. The more I think about it, the more that episode was necessary to show how poorly a group could work together, so that when you get the next episode and he's getting the gang together, it's almost like it's even more satisfying. It's like, no, here's what you need. This is the real group of people. There was an episode of Rick and Morty, the first half of this new season, where they spoofed the whole heist thing, and this became a meme.
You son of a bitch, I'm in.
You son of a bitch, I'm in. That's what the episode is. Chapter 7. You son of a bitch, I'm in. It was everything, but like it was so satisfying though, because he earned it. It wasn't just like I thought he was going to work with that droid, you know, immediately, but he kills him. And then it takes, 6 more episodes before we see him again. By the way, another beautiful thing about this show is it's not afraid to give you like a 4-minute sequence where that guy explains how he nursed and reprogrammed that droid. Like, it is so in-depth that it's like, he's talking about the quality of his craftsmanship. And it's like, I totally believe it. I totally believe that this killer robot is now all of a sudden a wet nurse. Like, I don't, I totally believe it now. It's a nice little aside. But yeah, no, getting the crew together was probably my favorite thing up to that point, because it was so earned.
And that's where the other episodes where you can absolutely look at it and say, all right, well, yeah, they just sort of, went to the next town and had the next adventure. But the show rewards you tuning in for that by making 7 feel like it matters. You know, like seeing these people come back, you're like, all right, cool. We've got these folks now.
Yep. Episode. They're all necessary.
They all matter in their own way. It may not be completely on the nose, obvious from the get-go, but it's these little pieces of information that build the overall story.
Except chapter six. You can skip chapter six. The hologram gets fixed by a droid. That's about the only thing that plays into the actual story.
Out of your mind. Six is great. Four, you can just fire and just watch. My thing with four also was it was another riff on Seven Samurai, but specifically Dave Filoni has done that already in Clone Wars, and it was so much better.
Yeah, but it introduced one of the most important side characters. You really can't skip that one.
Yeah, Cara Dune's awesome. She's really good.
And she's going to be back next season, so you need
to see that. Yeah, she's doing an awesome job. I mean, I saw her in Haywire. She's a little wooden then, but she's doing a really good job in this.
Yeah, she's a little wooden here and there. Yeah, but well, it flows better here with a ensemble. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
So
also, just thinking back, Alicia, you were talking about the how Mando started like fighting more for protection. They kind of hint that the child does that too, because they're arm wrestling and he kind of goes after her, just stop her from hurting him. So it's becoming like they're looking out for each other.
They got each other's backs.
Yeah, and like they're building on that more and more, though.
The foundling crew.
Because he's not new to her, but still they're arm wrestling, and that dude's like, no. And starts choking her, yep.
Yeah, and the thing they don't have to worry about for future seasons is aging him up, because he's already 50, so he's not going to all of a sudden become like a prepubescent.
You don't know. These things, they go in growth spurts. They're, you know, they're a baby, then overnight they're full on Yoda. It's just all of a sudden.
If he comes back with zits, then I'm going to have a problem with the show.
There is kind of precedence.
Baby group problem.
There's kind of precedence for him to age really quickly, though. That's the super weird part. Because Yoda, I forget the exact numbers, but he says something that he's like 900 years old.
Right.
And at another point, he says, been training Jedi I have for 800 years. And you're like, all right, so you were 100 when you started training Jedi. So you look at baby Yoda.
50 more seasons and he'll be grown up.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, I don't know. He's only going to grow like another foot and a half. So how long could that possibly take?
Yeah, we don't really know.
That's a good point.
Yeah, we honestly don't know. Like, I don't know. When is he grown up? Like, we don't know at all. And I
just say his first word and everyone's going to lose their crap.
I hope we learn as little as possible about his species, because I don't think it matters. And not everything has to be told to us. This is another, I kind of think it's just a fault of an audience nowadays where I got to know everything all the time or it doesn't make sense.
Season 2, episode 4, Yoda comes to Mando as a force ghost that explains the history of his species.
Stop.
And how to care for him by getting the right kind of frogs to feed him.
Yeah.
It's just a big information dump for Wookiee Wikipedia. Everyone starts typing furiously during the episode as it airs.
Yeah, and if you want to find out more, tune into Fortnite.
You know what's great?
Man. You know what's great?
I think it's great that Mando doesn't know what the Jedi are. That is probably the most refreshing thing about the last episode.
Well, they actually did do good ground laying work in Force Awakens, where Rey, you know, hears the name Luke Skywalker, and she's like, I thought he was a myth.
Mm-hmm.
That really
it's
works
amazing
out.
Amazing how time works in the galaxy far, far away, where 30 years is generations of like spooky magic from generations ago.
Well, I mean, I don't want to ruin anyone's day, but 2020 is to 1980 the way 1980 was to 1940.
Yeah.
So if anyone remembers the 80s, you are old.
Yes, I am.
So time does do a lot of things. Could just think about what the world looked like in 1980 and now think about it as now.
But if there were magic people with laser swords, I think we would remember.
Everyone would say they weren't real. They would say, no, that didn't exist. I didn't see it. I don't have any video of that. Therefore, it's not real. And even if there was video, someone would say, no, it's fake. It's fake video.
Fake video.
So that's a crazy thing about that. This season, this show can't exist forever with the child. At least I don't think so.
Oh, it will. It do.
But then how much is the show? because he can't spend another five seasons looking for someone to take care of him.
No, that isn't necessarily what the explaining woman told them.
That the armorer.
They are now their own clan. Yep. And that they must, you know, either you care for the child or find out where he belongs. And I think it's an either or situation until the show wraps up. And that's just it. That's all it is. Like, we go on adventures week to week, and then we return the child to its rightful place, and which is clearly in time because it is Yoda from a time travel experiment gone wrong. And then this show is over.
Well,
that's not what that's going to be, but okay.
she said, you are as his father. That's straight up pretty much what she said.
Right, unless you find the real place where he belongs.
And that's going to eventually be what it is.
I mean, that's the series finale.
Yeah, but I think that's three seasons at the most.
And then they do another show with you.
Yeah, that's the thing. They'll just have other shows to do, and the other show is something that's going to... And then
Mando will show up one time.
Well, so there's a lot of characters that are kind of up in the air right now, and Rise of Skywalker didn't help by throwing them even further into the air.
More characters.
Yeah, but there's one in particular.
Spin-off.
There's one in particular that caused a lot of questions to be raised, which I don't want to go into it, but the person who actually voices that character had to actually respond to it. There is a lot to be said, and it has to do with what happens after Rebels.
Wait, I'll say it. Are you talking about Sabine? I'll say it.
No, okay. Sabine is a piece of this puzzle, possibly.
Yep, but I know who you're talking about. I just wanted to be clear, 100%.
Yeah. I think Sabine eventually is a piece of this puzzle. I don't know how, though. I mean, do they bring her into live action? It'd be really cool, but... If you're going to do that, then what do you do with the follow-up to Rebels? Or do you go back to putting this character into an animated form? Rebels is done.
Wow.
That title is done. But that story has another very, very large element to it. So they're going to go back to that at some point. Maybe we're going to find out more in August. I mean, Celebration is coming up. They're going to have a lot to talk about between a new movie, the Obi-Wan series, Cassian series. They have a lot to cover, but I do feel that there is this big gap of the future, what happens after Rebels with certain characters, and what happens with a character very specifically.
Oh, I got it. The Rian Johnson trilogy live action in theaters.
Well, that could be the thing that's announced this month. So this month they're supposed to announce the new movie this month.
Really?
The director and the film is supposed to be announced this month in January.
It's Colin Trevorrow, and it's a redo of Rise of Skywalker as he intended.
Filmed in actual space.
I actually think I think there's a high possibility they just trot out Kevin Feige.
As a director?
No, that's the thing. Not as a director. Because, again, reports of what's going to happen is one thing. Reality is another. They may just bring him out and say, hey, this is our producer for the next series of Star Wars films, which... I like the Marvel films, but the Marvel films are extremely safe and they're very samey on a lot of them. I hope that changes with this whole new era coming up, but they've also had to do like 9 origin films. So it's kind of not their fault, but I don't want Star Wars to just keep doing the same thing over and over again, the way that some directors have handled the films. Well, I want them to do something different.
That's why Mandalorian is so refreshing.
That's what, yeah, exactly.
If you watch it as one movie, as one long movie, it
works
perfect. It is just the right amount of first act, just the right amount of third act, and a whole bunch of awesome second act that's mostly filler. It is a real movie. It's a movie.
Yeah, and that's the influence of Filoni and then Favreau, you know, heading the ship as producer. So, you know, do we see them come out on stage? Does Dave Filoni get a live action film after being initiated into live action by working with Jon Favreau? It's very possible.
Or even as a combo, like a duo, so they keep working together. I'd be fine with even as showrunners, like the producer thing. I would love that.
It might, yeah. It very well could be, because then as long as you just have somebody, you can have different directors. It's fine. Like we were talking about this pre-show a little bit. You can have different directors on these things, because as long as the story has a consistent story, it doesn't even have to have the same tone from movie to movie. A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back are completely opposite in tone. And then it completely gets flipped again with Return of the Jedi. That wasn't the problem with this new trilogy. It was that one person didn't look over the story and say, hey, this is where we're going. This is the middle. This is the end. Go and have some fun. That's kind of the lesson from this one. But also, Rian Johnson's going to get nominated for best screenplay, possibly best director.
I have movie tickets for Saturday. I'm so excited to see Knives
Out. It's absolutely phenomenal. I mean, Knives Out is my number one film of the year.
I don't know anything about it, and I am excited about that.
Yeah, it's an absolute blast. So, but in my opinion, he's too good to do this series right now. I'd rather him not do it because...
But The Adventures of Broom Boy.
Yeah, the idea that everyone can be a Jedi. Yeah, I absolutely love that idea. But, maybe going like in a direction where finally, hey, we don't have to reference everything that happened in the Skywalker saga. That's exactly what Star Wars needs. For the larger audience, for the smaller audience, that happened a long time ago. You know, for people who read the other stuff, that happened a long time ago. But the general audience knows, you know, they want what's familiar and they want to be patted on the head for understanding things.
Yeah, and Solo having Darth Maul show up. So, spoilers for Solo.
It's like 2 years old. Yeah, even more than that.
It's there just so that you can go, I know that guy. He's got horns in his head. Like that's the only reason it's there for general audiences. But then people who know him from the animated shows, he's a crime boss now or something, right?
Yeah. So when you see it, you're like, oh, wow. Okay. They're going to explore this even more. And, you know, yeah, for other people, for people who weren't aware of that, that must have been so confusing just from a standpoint of, wait, what year is it in this movie? Like, where am I?
That's true.
Did I travel backwards 35 years? Like, what is going on? So while it was a cool reveal, it was a very tough reveal for people who weren't aware that, by the way, the guy who got cut in half, he's alive.
Wait, is Han Solo the same age as the Wookiee? How is this working?
So that they have a lot of work to do with really just conditioning an audience to do something new.
I think the best Marvel movies were the ones that went for a different genre. That Taika Waititi's version of Thor completely reinvented the character and the genre. Mm-hmm. Or the heist film of the first Ant-Man and the spy thriller of, which one was it? Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Those were like the best ones because they were so different from all the other ones. And even Guardians of the Galaxy 1 was like, whoa, this is completely different and I'm into it. And then they all kind of merged into all the movies and that's fine. And then it becomes like this giant conglomeration of all the styles. But when you first see it, you're like, oh, this isn't just the same thing. I like this. And Star Wars needs to do that for their main series. Because they all blend together at this point.
So, yeah. So what I was thinking was The Mandalorian, watching it, it's not the same as the Star Wars movies as far as like look and everything else, but it gave me the same feeling as the first time I saw Star Wars as a kid. Like, it was fun. I just had fun. And it was a lot of lore and it was interesting. And it kept my attention. It gave me like...
But not like J.J. Abrams' Star Trek remake.
More like
A New Hope fun.
Yeah, I'm saying, that's what I'm saying. Like the original, like it gave me that same kind of fun feeling when I watched Mandalorian. I liked it. So.
Force Awakens was fun too, but it's fun in like a fast moving kind of way.
Yeah.
Like gets tiring after a couple movies.
Yeah. Cause then also it's tougher. And look, I've always said I'll defend Force Awakens for what it does because there was such a feeling of, oof, those prequels were rough that everyone kind of needed to be like huddled around a fire and be like, okay, look, we're going to bring this back kind of, you know, to base zero. And we're going to do that. So he made a remake for a sequel of a film series that he was making.
Soft reboot.
Yeah, it's a soft reboot. So it works once. They have to go back. They have to start with the ideas that just don't feel immediately familiar. You know, just try something different because they've done it time and time again with Star Wars, just not in their main films. And they did it twice with their main films, Empire and The Last Jedi. And both those movies, when they were released, in massive quotes, real fans said, you ruined my characters. It's too dark. They're not winning enough. I don't want to watch this. And then
there's
years
no
later,
way he's his father.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, this is dumb. They can't all be related. And then those same people 40 years later are like, they've all got to be related. It's like, wait a minute. What do you want?
Can we all agree that the best thing in Mandalorian is the line, come on, baby, do the magic hand thing.
Carl Weathers is a treasure.
Because he waves. He goes, hi.
He waves. So hi. Good.
So good. It is so good. I agree.
But like Adam, you know, Adam is knee deep in this stuff as I am. But I like to back up what Alicia was saying, Adam, would you agree that while we get these other little nods and stuff, if you never got them, it doesn't matter. Like, you still get to enjoy the show.
Yeah, it's good enough on its own merits. It's just those little extra accents and just sprinkled throughout for, you know, the fans that put in the time for the Clone Wars and for the comic books even and so forth. Those are the things that I appreciate. It's just like, you know, it's there, but it gives you that nice little warm feeling for a second, but it's not going to take away the casual viewer's experience at all.
I also enjoyed the way the cameos were kind of subtle, like a lot subtle.
Oh, yeah.
That was fun, too. That was more fun than just blatantly, like, everybody ever is in Star Wars. even Kevin Smith was in Rise of Skywalker, if you hadn't heard.
We really should talk about Sudeikis and
yes, please. That's so good. Just punching a baby.
I like the target practice.
Literally punches a baby twice.
When he shakes the blaster and it's like rattling.
That scene is so good. I did not expect that kind of humor. And when it started with that, we were dying when we watched it. It's so good.
That's 100%. That's 100% Waititi. That was not in the script anyway. No way.
Nope.
And it goes on for like 5 solid minutes.
It's so good. Sorry, go ahead, B.
I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I definitely wasn't expecting somebody to punch the baby.
It was like 3 or 4 times when Sudeikis turns to him. It's like, you just want to see it. It's like, we should check on him. He could be hurt. There could be something wrong with him. And there's like a long pause. You just want to see him.
The whole thing with the, you know, stormtroopers can't shoot straight. We've seen that joke a million times, right? Like it's overplayed. But the way Waititi kind of works it in here, not having anyone actually say anything, but just letting their actions have you fill in the dialogue in your head. That's what makes it funny. And me and Adam are actually talking about this on Disney Magic Hour. The whole tone and layout of The Reckoning, no, not The Reckoning, I apologize, of Redemption, great title, is very Waititi. If you have seen, you know, his other work, specifically this year's Jojo Rabbit, where you can have these moments of really fun humor and slapsticky almost, but when he feels like getting you emotionally involved, mm-hmm. he can pull that off. Now,
he did The Wilder People, right?
Yes, he did
that's
that.
One, that's and, one that's really hot, like really serious, and then also really silly. At times.
Yeah, yeah. And Jojo Rabbit's on the same tune. And I mean, look, you can look at Redemption, and if you want to be very reductive, you can say, oh, it's like T2. It's like the end of T2. It's like, yeah, I guess so. But you care about a character that not that far long ago was a complete psychopathic murderer.
Who kept trying to kill himself.
And was ready to kill the child. Like episode 1 is ready to kill that child. And then episode 8, you feel for this character who says, I've never really been alive.
IG-11. It's the only name I know out of all the show. the shot of him at the very beginning of that episode after 5 minutes of banter, which is awesome. There's he knocks out the scout troopers and takes the kid, and the kid, it's already a gif. It's like me on a roller coaster, and the kid's like, yay, on the speeder bike, just yay, waving his hands. But that is a magical moment. And it's like, I've already seen the 4-minute mini documentary about the reprogramming of IG-11. So I'm buying into this.
So good.
Yeah, I was.
And they can bring him back. Just a droid.
We already did it once. Oh, and I wanted to do a shout out to myself for the analogy, the metaphor that I used for Eddie Valiant not wanting to work with a tune because a tune dropped a piano on his brother. That's what I talked about in the first episode, the droid. It's like, I bet you he's gonna have to work with that droid, and it's gonna be just like Eddie Valiant, except the droid killed his family. So yeah, it's nice to see the droid redeem droids for him by saving them at the end. I got a logistics question. Can anyone answer why is Mando so good with the jetpack he just received?
Because he had training as a kid. Duh.
Okay. There was a line like that or something? He could say like...
I have a better logistics question. How the hell do the fobs work?
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier.
What are they tracking? You can't...
Only thing I've assumed is that there's a chip in the child that Werner Herzog put in him. Yeah. Which, by the way, his name is Werner Herzog. I don't care what his character's name is. His name is Werner Herzog.
Well, maybe it tracks the blood of people because there's a track route for him, I thought, too, for Mando.
Yeah, there is. That's what I'm saying. I don't know how they do it.
You got to have the DNA somehow or like you program it.
Yeah, they should have said something like in the earlier episode.
But no. Because if they had the DNA in the first place, they wouldn't need to track it because they're trying to clone them. They don't need them.
No, they have a database. It's on.
That's the same point I just made.
Ian, towards that, I wonder, I think they're trying to get the midichlorians out of him.
Yeah.
I don't know if, you know, like, I think that might be like
the spike. But the doctor had the cloning logo on his shoulder.
He did. So I'm saying, it can be in the same field, just not directly just trying to clone. Or maybe you just need a bigger sample than a drop of blood.
Yeah, maybe. That's a good
idea. Or they can clone a big, like, clone them, but not to live, just to exist and have to extract the midichlorians and blood transfusions.
Midichlorians choose who they enter. You know what? The midichlorian thing really confused the whole Force, the way it works. Even just the idea of the Force. So it might just be that this species is naturally in tuned to the Force. It doesn't, you know, no, because they say midichlorian count for Yoda. They actually say that when he takes Anakin's blood sample.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Yeah, he says something like it's the highest behind Yoda. Obi-Wan says that. Jesus, why do I remember that movie so well?
It's entirely possible that they have no idea what they were actually going to use it for, and they only wrote it in there as a MacGuffin, and there was really no point to it, but to make us think. But this is the brilliance of this show. I feel like by the end, they'll totally figure out a way to explain it somehow.
It'll be satisfying.
I do not for a moment think that Favreau and Filoni don't know every decision of what they're doing already towards the larger story. I don't think that for a second.
Not to mention Moff Gideon was behind all of it. So he wants the thing for something still.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Cause I mean, what's very rewarding if you ever go back, if you watch Rebels, then go back, there are slight lines between characters that happen in season 3 and they directly reference final shots of the last season of the last episode. So I have full confidence that we are not in a situation of, you know, other TV shows or even movie series where
I wonder which really movie series you could be talking about.
It could be The Matrix.
We'll figure it out one day. We don't really know.
Yeah.
Matrix is a good example, though. I'll give you that.
But, you know, we'll definitely see. I think they have that all written down. That's not something we'll have to worry about going forward, which is very nice to know that. It's like a little blanket of narrative comfort that I can wrap myself into after recent stuff.
For season 2, you think there'll be a time jump? Do you think we'll start later just so that we can kind of be already like he can already be like we can be past this and he's in some kind of groove there? Maybe they're hiding out somewhere. Maybe there'll be a crawl at the beginning that says like what's been going on for a year.
The child walks. that'll be the first with exclamation points.
The child speaks.
I could see that. Yeah, I could see like a little bit of time going by. I don't think you're going to lose the image of baby Yoda, though. Like,
No. I just mean, like, the bad guy gives the bad guy some time to regroup, gives them some time to fall into a routine of some sort, you know, so that we don't have to jump right into action from action. Like, they've settled down somehow, or they're on, or he's gotten some new piece of information and he's working toward it, and we never saw how it happened, you know, something like that.
Yeah, it could be that, or they just go cold open. And it starts with Mando running away from somebody while they're getting shot at. You know, like,
exactly.
which I guess they kind of did that already in the episode of the Gunslinger.
Yeah.
They kind of did that. So maybe they shouldn't do that just because it would be a repeat of the beginning of the first episode.
They'll do a 24 hours earlier episode where Mando's laying dead and the child is all alone. And then it says poof, 24 hours earlier.
It's just Memento. They just basically shoot Memento. And we, you know, the head injury was worse than we thought. He only now has a short-term memory. He can't learn to remember anything long-term.
The show opens and Mando is in carbonite on his own ship and a stranger is flying.
Sure. And it's Mulan because they want synergy.
I'm just gonna name, let's all speak out crazy things and then we'll play it back and make it sound like we're psychic.
Okay, well, we'll probably get covered by We Got This Covered. I don't know, Adam, what's the most ridiculous thing you could think of?
Oh, I think they're going to try the craziest thing. They'll try to, I think they'll do kind of a mirror of the first episode, but it'll be Boba Fett.
Oh, trying to get someone, to bring someone in, bounty.
He just obliterates everybody.
He doesn't do it cleanly at all.
I will forever stick until it's wrong, which it will be wrong. I consistently do feel that this series ends with Ahsoka Tano in some way with that child, only because of the child. I don't know why. I just feel like that road makes sense.
You think but three seasons or four?
I would love three. I mean, kind of honestly, I'd love two, but three sounds more correct.
Yeah. I mean, Favreau didn't even want to do the third Iron Man movie, so we might only get two.
I mean, so yeah, maybe I would love it too. I don't need more than necessary. That's always been a big thing with me. These shows being 35 minutes. I remember my wife Melissa, when we first saw the first episode and ended like 33 minutes into it. She was like, what happened? I'm like, the show ended. That's what credits me. She's like, what do you mean? It's so short. I'm like, yeah, because they told the story and now they're going to go away and we'll see it next week. And that's it. I am so appreciative of the way Disney Plus is going about releasing its stuff. The weekly, not this info dump where you feel almost compelled. I hate the binging thing. It's terrible.
8 news cycles instead of 1.
Yeah, but it also, it lets you, you know, take in the actual information that's given, because you're not trying to watch 7 hours straight of television, spending 4.5 of it staring at your phone.
It worked for Batman in 1966. You know, tune in next week, same bat time, same bat channel. If you watch them back to back, it's not as exciting because it's like within the first 10 seconds they get out of whatever mess they were in at the end of the last episode. Yeah. But knowing for a whole week, how are they going to get out of that? The Joker had them upside down over lava. How are they going to get out?
Like, look, you know, if Deadwood and Breaking Bad didn't need to put out episode like 12 hours of TV in a day, no one else does because they were the best at it.
You notice Netflix has been doing half seasons lately. They've been doing the half dump thing.
Have they?
I just watched half of Full House and the other half comes out a month later and it's like interesting.
Okay. I know that Fuller they did House. The full
sorry,
dump.
Fuller House, sorry.
I know they did the full dump on The Witcher. But I mean, regardless, I'm still only going to watch one a week.
Yeah, that's I've been doing. Like, yeah.
BoJack was a half dump also.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, The Witcher.
We gotta come up with a better term than half dump. All right, we should probably.
Rick and Morty half dump. Rick and Morty half dump.
You see, like that one really makes sense. That's okay.
They weren't done making it, so like I understand. They got it's a it takes a long time to get a full dump out.
Oh man,
it's where I do my best Twitter.
Good night, everybody. Ian, real quick, do you have a crazy wild guess for a cold open on season 2?
No idea. I have no idea. I didn't even think
it's
about it.
A herd of loth cats are chasing the child through a market square, and popcorn from the kettle store, and
they're gonna have they're gonna have a
blue milk and green milk fall from a shelf.
They're gonna have a not so Dobby like funeral for Queel. That's what I want to see. Poor guy. I have spoken will be on his tombstone. No, I have no idea.
that's all that's gonna be on there. No name, no year, nothing. I have
spoken. Yeah, I don't even have an idea. I mean, it's just gonna be. The show has surprised me a few times, so I don't really know.
It opens in Batuu.
You know what? I wouldn't put that too far past them.
Wait, didn't they mention some of the planets? They referenced some of the planets from the movies, I think. What was the casino planet? Camo Bite? What is it? Canto Bite?
Canto Bite. Yeah, Canto Bite. You're coming here. Yeah, like a Canto Bite. Yeah, something shinier than a Canto Bite something or something like that.
Yeah, they referenced that.
Slot machine.
Yeah, slot machine. Yeah,
Slot machine. So that was, I remember in Solo, because I just watched it for Black the first
Spire,
time.
Black Spire, blatantly.
Yeah, and they're like, without me, you wouldn't be able to get to Black Spire. It's like, but then her brain gets mushed into the Millennium Falcon. This was necessary information. We needed to know that.
And actually, just so, you know, for the Dark Saber thing that we were talking about earlier, that is referenced in Rogue One.
Is it?
Yeah, when Jin and Cassian are going through basically the big hard drive with the big mechanical arm.
Oh, the one where they put all the Easter eggs for future projects in, like the Sinister Six hallway in the never made Spider-Verse.
Yeah, that's just pretty much, you see something, or does he say it or do they read it?
But no, they read it.
Lightspeed tracking is in there too.
Yeah, lightspeed tracking, like the research was being done in there. So
yeah. Everything that was in future projects, they're like, throw it in this hard drive scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, at least they followed through.
All right. But that's what's so great about this show is that it's got tons of things, but you don't have to know what they are to enjoy the show.
Yeah. As long as it doesn't impede on understanding the narrative, like, great, I know what a Darksaber is. I know what happened and I know where it should be and where it isn't anymore. But if I didn't know that, it doesn't matter.
To an audience member, it's just like, oh, he survived and he cut his way out with a neat flashy sword thingy.
Yeah.
Like that, it's still a shocking moment because he survived, but to other people it's a shocking moment because it's the Darksaber.
Yeah.
And I like that it works on both levels.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right.
So we'll do another Park Stop Plus podcast when something interesting happens on Disney Plus. So we'll talk to you next fall. Did you guys see that WandaVision got bumped up a year? I think that was originally supposed to be 21 and now it's 2020.
I'm good with that.
Yeah, I think that has a lot to do with there's just not much coming out exclusive big stuff. So I mean, there is a big thing coming out in February, Clone Wars 6, which is going to be the Siege of Mandalore, which is, you know, Ahsoka versus Darth Maul. I don't know what else you want to get excited about something, but that's that. And then, you know, we have nothing until the Winter Soldier show. I shouldn't say the Winter Soldier show, but, you know, Sam and Bucky show, and now WandaVision will both be later along with Mandalorian. So, you know.
And we don't have the Obi-Wan show until, you know, a year or more from now, because that's 21 still. That's what I'm really looking forward to, because if it's anything as good as this one, especially considering who's behind it. I can't remember her name, but Deborah Chow. Some of my favorite episodes of The Mandalorian. So Ewan McGregor is literally the only thing I like about the prequels. I absolutely nothing else that I like from the prequels. So I am really looking forward to a whole lot of hello there.
I want to see what they do with them. I've always wanted an Obi-Wan show.
It's just sitting in the desert, just alone.
Just making s'mores.
Sand angels instead of snow angels.
Nothing happened.
The great thing is that the obvious path was always the Darth Maul path, but that path is finished. Like there is no story to tell there anymore. If you watch,
at least
Rebels
not
and whatnot.
Not in live action though. So if they get the timing just right.
They make it very clear that they had not seen each other for a long time until something happens in Rebels.
Oh, what does he know? He doesn't even recognize R2.
What do you mean he doesn't recognize R2? He's just playing along in that scene.
Oh, okay. Well, then tell the internet that, because they won't let it go.
the internet.
Old Obi-Wan. I've never seen this droid before.
No, it's the same thing as him telling him, I don't really, like, you know, your father was murdered by Darth Vader. It's like the same scene, man. The internet's real dumb if they're getting confused with that. It's woof. But yeah, that's all it is. It's just playing.
The internet's like, he shouldn't have said that because then now he kissed his sister.
Yeah, it's almost as if George Lucas didn't have the whole thing written out until the first movie was a massive hit, and he was like, "I better write some more of this," and that's how that happened. So.
Nope. It was all planned from the start. Yeah, it was all planned from the start. All nine stories.
I hate to bring it. Did anyone see Michael Eisner's tweet?
Yeah, I did. You posted it.
That's he said exactly what I said. Rise of Skywalker was fine. That's it. That's it.
It's that
fine.
Is not what he said.
He said it was fine. He said it was adequate.
I'll read it. Is acceptable. A lot of story and fan delights, but somewhat emotionless. While The Mandalorian on Disney Plus establishes show creator Jon Favreau as the new George Lucas, which Robert Iger had the foresight to declare. That is a very on purpose slap in the face versus one creative team while picking the other one up and saying, you did good. But that is the nicest way of saying, what a mess. Why can't you do it like these guys are doing it?
Hey, he said it was acceptable. All right.
Acceptable.
Yeah. The man pays for BoJack. I can't complain about it.
No, I love Michael. I think Eisner, well, that's a whole other show, but I mean,
yeah,
the amount that he did good for that company before, you know, he lost his partner when Frank Wells and, you know, just kind of got overwhelmed and went nuts. The only reason that Disney did not fall into the same situation that Marvel did in the 90s. And that's why, you know, Sony doesn't own the film rights to Mickey Mouse.
That's why we have a Hulk coaster. Thank you very much. So I will take
tear it down.
Nope. I think on that note, we've gone so far away from The Mandalorian. We have to end it now. But The Mandalorian, it's good.
It's really good.
That's it. It's good. I'm not even into Star Wars that much. And it makes me want to go and watch things like Rebels now because I want to learn more about this stuff.
Sucker.
Please watch it. It's great.
That's how good this show is, that it's turned me into a nerd for Star Wars.
Yep. Uh-huh.
Thanks to Adam and Pete for joining us. Where can we catch you guys?
The show that me and Adam do on a weekly basis is Disney Magic Hour. And actually, we're doing something a little different this week. We're doing a top 10 non-Disney films of 2019 because you should see things outside of the Disney bubble. Then we'll be doing a big film preview for 2020 in which we get excited for a lot more original films and not as many live action remakes and sequels. So a couple of really exciting weeks coming up on the show.
Oh, that's cool. I look forward to hearing that because I'm not actually sure what comes out this year.
You should join us for that show.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that later.
Okay. Adam, what's your YouTube channel?
Oh, you can find me over there. For as far as my top 10 of the year for movies, I could not be contained. So I went top 20. And you can find me over at MovieGuy365 over on YouTube.
And Ian and I are going to record a Patreon episode about all the things we're looking forward to and rumored for 2020 at the theme parks. So be looking forward to that in the next week or so.
Yay.
Yeah.
It's going to be so hard.
Runaway Railway is coming up. That's pretty exciting.
It's super exciting.
I cannot wait for that. I'm excited for that.
I am very curious for that ride.
Okay, so thanks for joining us, and we'll be back when something interesting happens on Disney Plus, whenever that might be. Maybe Home Alone will come back. I don't know. Thanks for joining us. Bye.
Bye.